with every sort. We're having mashed potatoes. Ooh, the turkey looks great. Thank you for loving me.
Glenn.
Thank you for being there.
Please.
Thank you for loving me. Everyone's thanking. The whole Glenn. World's thanking you. Thanking us for thanking you.
All right, long music coming up.
Ladies and gentlemen.
America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. And of course, here tonight, really no comparison. This is the Thanksgiving tradition unlike any other. Right now, I hope we are reaching out to thousands of people driving across America on the way to Grandma's house. Maybe actually it's Wednesday evening and they're cooking pies in the kitchen and they're listening to us right now because it is time for the holiday tradition that is Rucksgiving. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been just insatiable with your desire for Rucksgiving this year. I guess, of course, with my insane schedule and my weird hiatuses this year, I guess there was some fear out in the BOA nation that there wasn't going to be a Rucksgiving this year. Never fear, my friends. Of course there's going to be a Rucksgiving, and it's happening right this very minute. Welcome back to the show, Bruce Rucks. Thank you for joining me once again on the holiday special here for Thanksgiving. I'm telling you, man, these people, they love their Rucksgiving.
It's very nice to be here, and thank you, Tim.
It's really quite strange. I was saying to you before we got on the show, it's just every time I posted anything on Facebook in the last, like, month, I could be like, oh, it's a lovely day today. I'm like, yes, but is there going to be a Rucksgiving? And it was just, it was really insane every time. So, you know, the next day I would say something else, and it would be some other person would be like, is it going to be a Rucksgiving or not? And it was like, Jesus, man, these people. So, yes, there is a Rucksgiving, and it's underway right now. And as I said, it's pretty cool because people really do, it's weird, we've created this tradition, but they do listen to this, you know, on the way to their relatives or cooking a meal or maybe waiting for somebody else to finish cooking the meal. They're listening to it while they play video games or something like that. So
it makes me very happy, actually, that there are people that do enjoy that.
Yeah, it's really cool. And someone said earlier, you know, when I announced it officially that we were going to do the show, it was like, someone's like, my holidays can't really kick off until Rucksgiving. And it was like, Jesus, dude, how do you think I feel? How do you think I feel? Like, my holidays can't. If anything ever happens to you and Stan Friedman, who's my Christmas Hanukkah holiday special guy, I don't know what I'm going to do. My holidays are going to be a disaster if that happens. So I need you guys.
Is Stan still around?
Of course he's still around. He's still around, causing trouble, making a ruckus, spreading the word about UFOs. So
I'll be damned. The rumors of his death were greatly exaggerated.
Yeah, I don't know who you're I don't know where you're getting this information from, but yeah. No, he's doing great. So, and for the people, so you don't bug me on Facebook for the next month, yes, presumably there will be a holiday special. I got to give Stan a call after Thanksgiving, but yeah, we'll be in touch with him and get that rolling and underway for December. But tonight, it's all about Rucksgiving, and I've got a ton of questions for you, but this is so thrown together in a way, folks, because Bruce and I literally scheduled this episode less than 24 hours ago. So we chatted quite a bit last night. So I guess before we get into the topic that we're that, you know, that you have to talk about right now, which I think everyone can figure out. What's been going on with you? How have you been in the last year since last year's Ruxgiving? You know, what's going on in the world of Rux?
Well, good. I can say that. Financially, I've never really been in great shape in the last few years. I'm in much better shape than I have been for a while. I don't have regular employment. I live on rent, and my rent actually does not pay my expenses. So, you know, Obamacare is like the only thing I've got for health insurance, which, you know, what's coming down the pike, I'm a little worried about that.
But I'm
okay. I mean, I'm doing all right. I've got a decent safety cushion from an inheritance, and I do have some rent that keeps me from losing as much money as I was losing. So I do have a safety cushion while I figure out what the hell I'm going to do when I grow up.
Yeah. I hear you. Yeah, you're kind of like it's a losing proposition at the moment, so it can't necessarily continue, so you got to figure something out. But you're all right
for that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I've been there. Well, I wish you well, dude. I hope it works out. Look, you work in security. You're going to do great in Trump's America.
Yeah, you may have a point there, actually.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess, as I said, it's actually probably perfect for the Thanksgiving special in a way, because that's like everybody's going to have to fucking talk about this. Whether they want to or not, you know, they're going to be talking about the selection. The last time the listeners heard from me was a couple of weeks ago. I was heading towards being three sheets to the wind as the election unfolded and pretty much, you know, the quote-unquote upset of the century happened, and Donald Trump won the election. So I kind of we left in a sense of a cliffhanger where it was like, I'm pretty sure this isn't going the right way, guys. Have a good night. And so now I'm back, and I've gone through all the various stages, so I think I can handle discussing all of this now. And
the stages of death are complete.
Yeah, exactly.
In advance, I have to say this. In advance, I want to apologize to any listeners who I may inadvertently offend. You are not only entitled to your opinions, you are entitled to your secret vote. It is one of the most sacred things that we have in our democracy. If I say anything that you happen to disagree with, it is one guy's opinion. Just know this. I am not the enemy. I say this to Republicans as well as Democrats. I am a registered Democrat. I am not the enemy. I do respect you. I don't want to step on anybody's toes. Please do not take anything that I say personally, and I will be slamming my own party as well as I slam the Republican Party. So just know that in advance, and I feel for every single one of you, because this will probably be the topic of conversation at the dinner table, and I dread the fights that are going to pop up because of it.
Oh, God, yeah, I can't wait to see the news. I bet somebody gets shot or stabbed or, you know, beaten with a gravy bowl. I'm putting my money on beaten with a gravy bowl, actually, yeah.
I just wanted to make all that clear in advance. I do respect you. You're okay. We're all Americans here. Let's just all start with that. We are all Americans here.
Well, actually, there's a lot of listeners from around the world listening, but they count. They're not celebrating Thanksgiving with us, but they're celebrating Ruxgiving. So, yeah, I got a couple. It's weird. A guy from Scotland and someone from so we'll get to it when we do the questions. But,
I welcome you, and I'm very glad that you are listening. This is the one time of year that anyone knows who I am and that I actually have any kind of presence, and I do appreciate your being there.
Well, and everything Bruce said goes ditto for me. That's the thing where it's like we're going to try not to do this more than like, you know, 20 minutes to a half an hour. So if you're like someone who can't deal with this shit, and I don't blame you, you know, skip to like a half hour into the show. We'll be into other stuff. But it's like you got to talk about this. It's like you said, it's going to be everywhere in a couple days for the holidays and shit. And
it will not be pleasant.
Yeah, no, for real. And I totally echo what you're saying, you know. Folks, don't – that's the thing. As like an outlet like this, it's like, oh, gee, you can't help it, you know. You can't help but piss somebody off in this whole mess. So it's like, you know, folks, this is opinions, and we're trying to figure this whole thing out. So if you
enjoy
think we're, like,
families.
Wrong and we're idiots, that's fine. But don't, you know, don't get all pissed
off. Enjoy your families. Enjoy your friends. Please have a good time together. You know, just please.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, man, I don't know. It's just I was joking to last night when we were talking about this, too, where it's like, you know, I want to get that. That's important that you said that. And I think it's I think we almost have to preface this as we talk about the the infamous Donald Trump. You know, they had like a joke like this on the show Silicon Valley. I don't know if you watched that show, Bruce, on HBO.
No, but I might start watching it now that it's been mentioned.
Yeah, the guys were talking about their boss, who's like their best friend, and they were really pissed at him, and everything started out where they're like, Richard's great, but, and the guy's like, you know, we have to stop just prefacing everything with that. Let's just say Rigby, you know, that way we know, yes, Richard's a great guy, but here's why he's an asshole. So that's kind of what we're, I guess, should get across here. It's like, yes, everybody, I think Bruce can chime in if he disagrees with me. I'm pretty sure he doesn't. I find Donald Trump to be just a boorish, awful human being with, like, terrible opinions about various groups of people that are just shocking and awful and terrible. So, you know,
it is extremely easy to understand why people don't like Donald Trump.
Exactly.
We need to get that right off the bat. We all know that.
Right. So we're gonna Rigby this, folks. We're just gonna see, you know, Trump is an offensive asshole. Now let's just move it. But as Bruce stressed the other night when I talked to him, what's done is done. He's been elected now. Let's look at the landscape of things here and try and figure out what the hell's going on and, you know, how the hell it all came to this. You know. So, and what good might come out of it? Because we're stuck with the guy, so maybe something good can come out of it.
We can do postmortems. We can look to the future. We don't know what's going to happen yet. I know some people who are literally terrified of what is happening. Most of the people I know are Democrats, and some of them, not all of them, some of them are just terrified. Others have taken it in stride, and it's just fine. When everyone said, this is stunning, that was amazing to me, because no, I was not stunned. I was surprised, but I wasn't stunned. I was stunned when W got office. That will stun me for the rest of my life. I've never quite been able to wrap my head around that one. I was surprised that Trump got in, only because I didn't think the Electoral College would go for him. I figured the shoe-in was for Hillary, the Electoral College would go for her, and that was that. But I did very strongly suspect that Trump had a great deal more support than the mainstream media was putting out. Just reading between the lines and the way the Democrats were handling everything, they were just trying to shovel any news of Trump's gains under the carpet while getting up in front of everyone and saying, pay no attention to the orange man behind the curtain. We are the future. We know what is going to take place. They were just denying it and, you know, telling everyone, no, do not pay attention to this. We are the winners. And that's why they lost.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of reasons why they lost. They just fucked it up from the word go, you know.
They did fuck it up from the word go. I have to agree with you.
I mean, you and I were both Bernie fans, even though Bernie fucked me on my bumper stickers. You know, I still support Bernie, despite his foible of not mailing me my bumper stickers. So,
just from my own personal experience, I mean, this is the Democrats I know. I know a lot of Democrats, and I know quite a few Republicans. And we do sit down to dinner together and have chats, and we're fine. You know, which is why I'm trying to stress to everyone, please, let's just remember who we are.
Yeah, we're your buddies.
Differently. Right. We're not the enemy. The Republicans are not the enemy, and the Democrats are not the enemy. We've all got to get together and be calm and cool and talk. And that's something I've always prided the Democratic Party on, is that ordinarily, up until this election, it has always been my experience, the Democrats tend to stay pretty calm, pretty cool, and reach across the table and try and come up with effective compromises and all that type of thing. It's not always the case. And with this election, it definitely was not the case. I've seen some reactions that were just kind of terrifying, really. We need to stay calm. We do not know yet what this guy is going to do. We do have a Republican now in office with a Republican Congress. From my own personal experience, I've never seen anything good come from that. That doesn't mean that some good things couldn't come out from that.
Right.
And we do need to be thinking about that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it's just fucked up, because it's like the whole – it cuts across so many spectrums in a way where it's like people like you and I were saying, you know, let's just wait and see. Let's watch it play out. Let's let it play out and see what – you know, the people who are like, yeah, you're an asshole. What do you mean let it play out? It's like, what other option do we have, dude? You know, that's my attitude.
Look, man, a year from now, we'll have plenty to bitch about. Because at that point, you will have done something. And
right.
Then we'll know, and then we can talk about it. And so far, nothing has happened. Nothing has happened. None of us knows what's going to happen yet. We just have to wait and see.
Right. And the guy seems like he's so woefully in over his head that he's going to, like, they're already saying that there's all kinds of conflicts of interest with his businesses and shit. So, I mean, I feel like, I think you mentioned this the other night. It's like, and I said this way back in May, folks. I told you this, that there's going to be a turnover on whoever won the presidency. So I think he's not even going to make it through like a year. I think he's going to fuck something up, like, you know, where he's going to cut a deal, a trade deal that'll somehow help out his casinos, and they'll figure it out, and he'll have to fucking resign. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that happens to all the presidents. They all do that.
Yeah, but they'll be especially after him this time. You know what I mean? It's like, because he has all.
Oh yeah.
So he's already. They're already saying that there's all these conflicts of interest and shit, and it's like, they're looking to. I think they're just going to look to try and get rid of him if he becomes a problem. I think that's the gist of it. Right now, he's rewarding all his cronies and shit, so they're not going to cause any trouble for him yet.
Every president does that.
Yeah.
They all do. Republican, Democrat, it doesn't matter. They all reward their business buddies. We're largely a mercantile protectionist state. You know, whichever administration is in power rewards the people that supported them.
Well,
and
yeah, and it's human nature, too, in a sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I get a job, I
nature.
Help out friends of mine. It's like that, you know, you help out. Who else are you going to trust to get the, you know, to do a good job? People you trust and you know. So it's human nature.
And it crosses party lines. Not to mention the conflict of interest thing. It's like, look, in both Republican and Democratic administrations, we've seen a tremendous privatization of a lot of government functions. And that privatization takes it into the business world, not into the government world. We have seen a lot of that over the last, I don't know, 20 years or so.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Yeah, I mean, I'm not terrified, but, you know, I'll be keeping an eye on it. That's all you can really do.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what else to say. It's like, I hope people aren't, like, terrified, you know? And if you're like, a Muslim or someone who's Mexican or, you know, all these other groups and stuff, it's like, I can understand why you might be terrified. My heart goes out to you, and I'll speak out if you get oppressed. But there's nothing...
Yeah, I'm in exactly the same camp there. That's not a good idea. The sad fact is that since 9/11, the world changed with 9/11. We have had what amounts to concentration camps for all practical intents and purposes. Now, mind you, once Obama went in, that did not change. We still have those. And this is something that everyone has to remember. It's not like everything changed under a Democratic administration.
Where are these
the
concentration
still being,
camps?
Well, you know, like Guantanamo.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true. I guess, how big is it?
We have torture camps. We've had torture camps around the world. These things are still in operation. It's not like the Democrats just waved a magic wand and got rid of them. Obama was going to get rid of Guantanamo. He stated he was going to do so. He never did. Guantanamo is still open and running.
Yeah. So, exactly. I think that, you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I think the Democrats blew it. They should have supported Bernie more, and they anointed Hillary. You made an interesting point because I kind of dismissed it, but since it came from you, I thought it was interesting that you thought that that Hillary is not in good health, so maybe, you know, when the Comey thing happened, I guess let's delve into the sort of conspiracy angle of this, because it's like the Trump thing, it looks like some kind of victory over the globalists, which is like the complete antithesis of what conspiracy theorists sort of put forward
and,
all the time. You know, it's like, oh, they'll never let Trump win because the system's going to keep him out.
And the victory over the neocons. But we don't know that that is the case yet. It could be and it could not be. We don't know. There's something that everyone has to bear in mind. It doesn't matter what a president says before he takes office. He is going to be briefed by the outgoing president before he takes that oath of office and takes the office. And what's going to happen in that briefing? I'm going to sit him down and say, look, I know you want to do, or you have stated that you want to do A, B, C, D, E things. This is why you can't. Listen, I was in the same boat. Every president before us has been in the same boat. There are certain things you can do, and there are certain things you just can't. And he lays out the practical realities. And certainly, by the time he has sat down for his first briefing with the Joint Chiefs...
All right, you there?
Yeah.
All right, we're back on the air now. So, sorry about that, folks. That was weird. Folks in the chat room, we need you to keep an eye on things. So if we lose audio again, let us know. Yeah, last thing so we were talking about where we left off, in case, I don't know exactly where it cut out, but the idea is Uber secrets. What do you think the president, what do you think Obama told Trump when they first met? You know, anything
well,
really good?
I am reasonably certain He is going to prep him on international situations in general and what the United States is currently doing. He'll prep him on all that stuff. He'll give him a talk on why certain things are not doable, whether he wants to do them or not. I don't believe he will disclose everything about UFOs at that meeting, but I do believe he will prep him for the disclosure of UFOs about that meeting, which he will get with his first meeting with the Joint Chiefs of Staff. That's what I believe. It is impossible to keep UFOs secret from the president. It is impossible. This is a guy who meets with the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He has the intelligence services. There is regular sabotage that takes place by UFOs on our nuclear bases. You cannot keep that secret from the president. They are going to have to brief him on that. So, yes, he's going to be made aware of a whole lot of things that he was not aware of before he took office.
Yeah, it would be interesting. You wish you could be a fly on the wall in that scene so you could figure out. Because it's like human nature. Like, I mean, I know Trump doesn't seem like the most inquisitive person, but I feel like that would be like if you – you know, if you become president and you're meeting the president, it's like, that would probably be like, obviously I'm biased, but that would be like the first question I have. I'd be like, all right, dude, give me the deals on, give me the details on UFOs. Let's have it.
I am certain he is not stupid.
Yeah.
This is a guy who is an international businessman. He is a multi-billionaire. You don't get that way by being stupid. So
well,
he's
I don't
not
know. He seems, I guess he's superficially stupid, I guess, to put it that way. He seems crafty, but I don't know. I can't quite put my finger on it. He doesn't strike me as particularly bright, let's put it that way, but I may be wrong.
There is something else that has to be remembered by everybody. The president does not run the country. He is one guy who helps run the country, and he does try to help. He helps establish policies. There's certain things he wants to get done. He does have intelligence services, and the military at his disposal, but he does not do this stuff alone. So when you're worried about Trump, you also need to look back. We've got a Republican Congress backing him. But Trump is not a typical Republican. The party was not behind him for good reasons. He is not fully globalist. He's not really globalist, and he's definitely not in the same camp with the neocons. Absolutely
right.
Not. However, his vice president is a neocon. If anything happens to him, we got the neocons firmly back in power. And Jim Maher is suggesting that this might be a Trojan horse to try and, you know, do something to Trump and get the neocons firmly entrenched. That's a possibility. I mean, it's really hard to say. We don't know what's taking place. There's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that you and I are never going to be privy to. We just don't know. We can only speculate. And Trump is not going to be running the country by himself. He is going to have to rely on other people. He does have to rely on Congress, which is probably going to rubber stamp a whole lot of what he wants.
Yeah.
But also not everything that he wants. And that we're just going to have to wait and see. And as far as the military goes, the Joint Chiefs, the intelligence services, we're just going to have to wait and see there, too.
Yeah. You know, exactly.
I have to admit, I'm very curious. My take on all of this stuff, I was Mr. Spock. I was absolutely the coolest and most placid person when I got the news. Literally, I raised an eyebrow and I said, interesting, because I had not expected that. And ever since, I've just been really calm and sitting back and saying, well, I really can't wait to see what happens. I'm very, very curious.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it would have been, it was a change election in a sense, so certainly there's going to be a lot of change. We'll see what that change looks like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right, so we've satisfied the political talk here. So I think that was pretty much all I really wanted to say. You know, I'm disappointed in how it shook out, but what's done is done, and now it's time to watch the show happen.
Yeah.
And see.
Sit back on the sidelines, have the popcorn, keep your eyes and ears open. We'll have plenty more to talk about next year after he's actually done something.
Exactly.
Then we can talk. Then we can actually speak with, you know, far more knowledge.
Exactly. All right, so let's do some Rux questions from the listeners because they are insatiable, as I said. David McIntyre, he starts out, he wants to know if during your private investigations, if you came across a relation of the colors red, white, and black. He knows you've discussed this during the architect's interview some years back, so it'd be nice to see if there's some kind of connection. He knows of the Jolly Ranger being black and white and the Jolly Rogue being red, but he has never found any other deeper relation between this and, say, the colors in relation to the whole Atlantis mystery. He recently read a book about a woman's travels in Tibet, and the same three colors are integral to Tibetans. So he sees a connection to the Nazi movement in Germany, as they did several expeditions to Tibet back in the 1930s. He's just wondering if there's a deep belief system that has permeated down through the time. So the colors red, white, and black. And he says, say hi to Bruce from Glasgow, Scotland, and have a peaceful holiday season. I put a little Australian accent on that at the end. I don't know why. But, yeah, that's David McIntyre in Scotland. What a complex and fantastic question for Ruxgiving.
Thank you, David. That is an excellent question. My best to all of you in Scotland. I have so much to say on that, I don't know where to start. Yes, there's a very deep connection. It goes all the way back to antiquity. You'll find that red, white, and black are the central colors in pretty much every religion around the world. You notice that is in Tibet. They are the three central colors, with the three central colors of Egypt. You will find them throughout the Indo-European world, and you find them in Asia as well. Now, they're a legacy of the Indo-Europeans, I'm pretty sure. Now, in any event, yes, red, white, and black have deep, deep religious significance, and I do believe that significance ultimately ties into the gods and who we would call aliens, or people from not from this planet. I believe those people not from this planet are just like us. We are their descendants. But, yeah, I do believe that there's a connection there. When it comes to the Nazi connection, you are absolutely correct. They were already ahead of that with the Thule Society, the mystical society, when they came up with the Nazi regalia. They came up with the swastika on their flag. It is red, white, and black. And the swastika is not only an Indian symbol, I mean East Indian symbol, but you find it all over the world. It is everywhere. I believe that is also a legacy of the Indo-Europeans, and that they are far more widely traveled than the scholastic community admits to. And that's the proof of it. Those swastikas are everywhere, along with footprints, spirals, various other symbols that cross the Atlantic all the way back to antiquity. The Nazis knew about that, and they had very deep inroads into Tibet. Now, the Germans made inroads into Tibet before any other Western civilization, and the Tibetans loved them. I remember seeing a movie. I want to talk about comic book Nazis. This movie started with the Nazis doing what Nazis always do in movies, which is machine gunning everyone who doesn't want to give them the secret thing that they want. But they meet the Tibetan monks and they say, fuck you, you will give us what we want, or we will kill you. And they machine gun everyone to death, and then they get kung fu out of there. That never happened, I promise you. The Tibetans loved the Germans. They loved the Nazis. They were crazy about the Nazis. They gave the Nazis their complete 108 volume of the Kong Shura, their sacred text, with their blessing. There was no gunpoint involved here. Karl Haushofer, who was considered kind of the Amanon's Greaves behind the Nazi party, although he had some deep misgivings about Hitler, his personal protege was the deputy Führer who defected to the Allies during the war, Rudolf Hess. There was a whole intelligence story behind that, which is kind of lengthy. But in any event, Karl Haushofer was his personal mentor, and he was largely, by proxy, a mentor to Hitler as well. He and Hitler had he had some misgivings with Hitler down the line, but he did survive any of the purges, any of that stuff. When the Nazis went into Tibet, Karl Haushofer had been there ahead of them. He was actually a bone priest. I mean, he was so accepted by the Tibetans that he was one of their priests.
Wow.
And he was not the only one. There were several Nazis there. And I'm just telling you, the Tibetans and the Nazis were as close as you could get. So the next time you look at the supposedly completely racist Nazis, and they were somewhat racist, they were racist to selective races, but not to all races. The Mexicans loved them. American Indians loved them. They had very good international relations, which is one of the reasons that we wanted to go to war with them, saying, these guys are doing too well. And they definitely did not like the Jews, no question of that. They were not as anti-black as they're painted to be. They were anti-black. They did believe in the Aryan dream and all that nonsense. And like I said, Mexicans loved them. American Indians loved them. They got along extremely well with a lot of tribal societies. The Arabs loved them. They got along really well with the Arabs. And the Tibetans were just crazy about them. The Japanese loved them because they basically were living by their Bushido code. So they did not have a problem with Asians at all. They were fine with Asians. They were fine with a lot of other races, just not the Jews and, to a large extent, the blacks. They did have some very, very curious ideas about race and genetics. And those got molded by the Nazi administration criminally, in my view. They had discovered a lot of the same stuff that I wrote about in my books, but they criminalized it. They took that to believe that they were the master race. They had the right to own the world. They had the right to be the masters of all they saw. I definitely do not believe in that. I definitely think they way took that.
They perverted it.
They perverted it. They did absolutely horrible things with it, criminal things.
Yes.
But that is where they got it. And that is one of the reasons that I believe, one of many reasons, my various governments today, I think, kind of keep a lid on it. They're afraid of some of the racist implications, because it wasn't that long ago. This was only two-thirds of a century ago, folks, that we did see that taken very badly out of context, very badly perverted.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That's why the government, like, keeps the secret, the alien secret, because it could be perverted by people who misunderstand it, in a sense?
Absolutely.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
Absolutely. And I believe that's exactly what Hitler and the Nazis did.
Interesting. I've never thought of it that way, but that's a unique way of looking at it. So, yeah. See, you make me think of new things after all these years, man. So, yeah, I never thought of that.
Well, it was an excellent question. I want to thank you, David, from Scotland.
Yeah, nice job, David. All right. I think that covered the question. I mean, I don't know. He got more than enough. I don't see a single question mark in his three paragraphs, so we'll move on, because I think we covered essentially what he was asking.
Right.
All right. Going down a different route, Corey Thornton wants to know your thoughts on the conditioning of thought in some of the more recent movies. You gave a lot of info in past interviews regarding Hollywood versus the aliens. He's curious to hear your thoughts on the concept of tearing down the old world, i.e. the world as it is today, to build a new one. Sorry, folks, I'm reading these like all along, so my pacing isn't great. Has your research into the ancient world intersected with this theme of tearing down the old world to build a new one? He can give more detail if needed, which I didn't need. And he says, but examples of this theme running through them are Captain America, Winter Soldier, X-Men Apocalypse, Man of Steel, etc. Interestingly, all these are comic book movies, he realizes. That's Corey Thornton. Wants to know your thoughts on sort of this storytelling trope that's emerged in the last few years of, you know, tear down the old world, build a new one. So what do you think? It certainly seems to be happening in real life, so who knows? Maybe they're conditioning us to that in a whole broader sense. But what are your thoughts, Mr. Rux?
Yes, I believe that there is more or less a program to try and get people on board with that idea. Although simultaneously, you have to notice in movies like Man of Steel or Batman versus Superman or I'm going back to TV, Lois and Clark. There were episodes in that. I'm going all the way back to Lois and Clark. Let's put it that way, back to the 90s, back in Bill Clinton's tenure. There were episodes in that were questioning Superman was really our friend. What would happen if this guy just went off? And that's actually my favorite fighting game in Justice Gods Among Us, in the universe where that happens. Superman becomes a tyrant over the rest of the world, and the superheroes are united with him or against him. It's a civil war between them.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I do believe there's not only a certain amount of conditioning toward the one world thing, which, remember, folks, that's what the Nazis were for, too. I'm just reminding you. That's what the Nazis were for, too.
Hmm.
Remember this. This is an idea that can very easily become perverted. I believe the neocons have perverted it, and the globalists have perverted it to a certain extent. That does not mean that they are entirely criminals, or even necessarily criminals, but in some instances, waging war around the world, we've been declaring war around the world all over the place, wherever we damn well feel like it, and well, provoking anyone we feel like provoking.
It raises an interesting side question, though. It's like, can globalism even... Can a one-world government even be pulled off? Or maybe 1984 is right, where it's like you really can't. You may be able to have like a secret world government, but it's like, I don't know, like outright, if you could possibly do it, unless somehow like you had a transformative event, like an alien showed up, and then you're like, oh, we're all Earthlings. But even then, it would be like people would argue about shit. So I don't know.
Well, you're familiar with Carol Quigley, right? With Hope and Tragedy.
Yes.
Carol Quigley is the Oxford mentor of Bill Clinton, and I know other presidents and other world leaders have listened very closely to him. His view was that ultimately there could only be a one-world socialist government. Whether anyone wanted that or not, liked it or not, there could only be that. But that what was taking place had been seen for a long time. It basically started with Reagan and has been continuing since, which is the gradual creation of a neo-feudalist state that is run by the corporations with the entire world as its serfs. That's where you see the money going straight up and not trickling down. So he made a warning against that when he was talking about the what would essentially eventually become a one-world socialist government. So these two things are kind of diametrically opposed. And any given president, any given administration, any given bunch of people, any given group is going to fall generally in one or the other camp. In general, I think the Republicans tend to go toward the medieval serf thing, and the Democrats tend to go for the one-world socialist thing. That was one of the things that Hillary was blasting Bernie Sanders for and Sanders supporters, saying that they were fantasizing some socialist utopia that was never going to exist, which was not a wise thing for her to say. It's one of the reasons that she really screwed it.
Yeah, one of many, yes.
Right. I mean, that would have alienated a whole lot of her supporters very badly, I think.
Yeah. Well, once the Bernie fans found out Bernie really did get screwed, it kind of like, you know, the whole idea of like begrudgingly supporting her became even more of a challenge. So what do you? Yeah, I kind of interrupted there for the idea of the globalism. So I guess his idea is like, if I could sort of like dig a little deeper into his question, you know, do you think that this is like intentional, or is it kind of like just in the zeitgeist that the sort of idea of tearing down the old world and building a new one? Like, are we being conditioned in a sense for this big change, or is it like just something that people can sense in the ether?
No, yes and no. I do believe we're being conditioned for that change and that is deliberate. The United States, especially with the neocons, has wanted to convince everyone that the United States has a special manifest destiny to rule the world, to be in charge of a one-world government and basically in control of everything. We have largely thought that since at least World War II, but the neocons put it into overdrive. What you will see in the media, and I find this interesting, is not only a conditioning toward wanting to accept this new one-world order, but you'll find an equal number of movies that are against it, that say this is not a good idea. Like I say, like in The Fighting Game, you have Superman Tyrant. And I see that happening in a lot of movies, too. This one-world government can be considered, you know, demonic or evil or alien or whatever.
Yeah.
And I kind of see an equal number of those, oddly enough. So I'm a little curious about that myself.
Okay. Now, coming all the way from China, we got an American expat in China. He wants to know if you have any thoughts. It's Marco Withrow. And he wants to know if you have any thoughts or new information. I'm interested in this because I've been following this story too. On the recent articles that claim that a new hidden chamber may have been found in the Great Pyramid and its possible implications, he wishes you the safest and happiest of Thanksgivings to you, me, and all of our families. And, of course, all back at you, Marco, and all the listeners as well.
Thank you very much. I wish you and everyone listening the same. Yes. I am very interested in the chamber. They have definitely found a chamber. The problem is they have to get permission to get into it. What they found is a vacant area. That vacant area is obviously some kind of chamber. They're able to determine that. It's at ground level, and they know exactly where it's located. Now, in order to get to it, they've got to get permission from Egypt to dig into it, because they're going to have to tear out part of the pyramid to get to it. The last I heard was quite a few months ago. I want to say it was
April or May, I think.
Yeah, it was about spring. It was about spring or summer, early summer. I remember hearing something about that, and I was trying to follow up, but I have not heard any follow-up on it since. Yes, I'm very curious about that.
My understanding is that they were allowed to do the scans through permission of the Egyptian government, and then they presented the scans and found the chambers, and then another set of scans from an outside place didn't find them, so they're sort of like, they want to do further, they want to be 100% sure that the things are there, and even then, who knows if they'll give permission, but right now they were kind of like, dismissive of it. You know, I think no pun intended, it has to be like an airtight.
Right.
Like you said, you know, if they're going to start getting at that thing with chisels and stuff, and even as carefully as I'm sure they do it, they don't want like an Al Capone's vault thing on their hands. Like they need to be sure.
Oh, I don't expect there'll be anything in that chamber.
No, I know that. I just mean, yeah, that was a poor choice of comparison, actually. Yeah,
chamber
would be. They just don't want.
Actually, Al Capone's vault at least had some booze bottles there.
Exactly. Yeah, they don't want to be looking for a vault and end up just not finding anything. I guess what I'm trying to say, but yeah.
Yeah, in advance, I would tell them don't expect to find anything in it. There's nothing in any of the other chambers of the pyramid that we do know about. I don't believe there's anything in this chamber either, or probably will not be. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't go in and have a look at it. It's a new part of the pyramid that we don't know about. They would have put it there for a reason, and it's one more part of the puzzle. So what I've seen of the tests or what I heard of the tests convinces me that, yes, I believe there is a chamber there, a regular chamber. That's one of the things that convinces me. They were able to determine that, you know, it's got right angles. So, you know, God does not draw in straight lines.
Yeah.
Man does. So, yeah, I think we need to definitely get in there and have a look at it, but I think it's going to be held up. It sounds to me like the Egyptians just want to hold it up, and they will probably be able to do that for a very long time.
Probably, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it pops up every, like, couple months. You know what I mean? So who knows what. So you don't think they'll find any treasure or anything? Because originally one guy was like, one government official was crowing about how there was a crazy treasure in there and stuff. But
all the way back to the first opening of the pyramid. That was done by Khalif al-Mamun. We're going back, you know, way back in history. Khalif al-Mamun was the first one to break into the pyramid.
Yeah.
He and his men. And they did it because they were convinced that there was treasure inside it. That's a whole long story that I don't want to get into because they more or less, as they were giving up, a stone fell inside, they heard it, and they went back to it and broke into the chamber, and now we know about all those chambers inside the pyramid. But that's how that happened. And they found nada. Squat. You want to talk about being disappointed, all that effort, and nothing in there. They didn't give a shit about, you know, the architects or any of this other fantastic stuff. They just wanted the damn treasure. No treasure.
But didn't they find shit in King Tut's tomb, or is that not in the pyramid?
Oh, that's not in the pyramid. No.
Ah, okay. See?
King Tut's tomb is in the Valley of the Kings. In fact, all of the tombs are in the Valley of the Kings.
That's where they found all the good stuff?
Oh, yeah. Weird. That's in Upper Egypt, at the other end of Egypt, which is actually south. That's Luxor in that area.
Mm, okay. Interesting.
And King Tut's tomb was removed from the rest of them, and it was virgin. The inner chambers were virgin. Someone had broken into the outer chambers at one point, but the inner chambers were virgin. That's why that was such a huge find. Everything in there was completely intact the way it was when it was put there, 1400, 1300 B.C.,
it's pretty amazing all that time ago. Well, it's cool because you think that someday, that as the technology gets better and shit, they should someday be able to do, like, an insane X-ray Uber scan on, like, the pyramid. You know what I mean? And be able to I'm talking about, like, what we're doing right now is a Xerox compared to what we can do with a copy machine in the future. You know what I'm saying? It's like that. I feel like they'll be able to, like, do, like, an absolutely perfect, pristine scan so you can know.
Okay,
exactly.
Let me give you a quick backstory on that. A guy named Luis Alvarez, Nobel Prize winner in physics, his name comes up in the Kennedy assassination, too, with some BS for cover-up. But Alvarez came up with a cosmic ray device that was able to measure cosmic rays and find chambers by use of that. It worked everywhere in the world except the Great Pyramid. The readings were never consistent. Everything was always skewed, and he never figured out why. That was the only place in the world that his device did not work.
Weird. Did they ever figure out why?
If they did, they ain't saying.
Weird. Because there's a fucking UFO in there, folks. I just say, I like to take things to the most extreme level sometimes, just for laughs. So
I don't blame you. It's fun.
Don't take me seriously. Please don't.
Look, I'm the man who believes in Martians, okay?
Yeah.
It's perfectly respectable if you write nonfiction books about Mars. When you write nonfiction books about Martians, people give you a funny look.
Exactly, yeah.
I read a lot of stuff about the face on Mars. and I can show some details on exactly what I think the faith is and that I think prove what the faith is. And to people who are friends of mine, I've shown some of these, and one of them in response posted on this one little chat form that we had. He posted in response a happy face on Mark, you know, pasted over the face of Mark. I busted a gut. I was just funny as hell. And I've kind of been using that in any talks that I do fifth, because if you're going to be talking about this kind of thing, and I do firmly believe it, but if you are going to be talking about Martians, if you are going to be talking about ancient civilizations on Mars and being connected to Egypt and being connected to Sumer and all this stuff, you have got to keep a healthy sense of humor, and you have to get the laughter out in order to get to the serious stuff.
Yeah.
You just got to roll with the punches, and you got to go light.
Exactly. So who knows, but hopefully someday maybe they'll get around whatever the problem with that guy's thing was and do a real scan of, you know. It stands to reason that the technology. I was thinking about that today because there was an article about Stonehenge. They found a giant complex like a mile away from Stonehenge.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, obviously they found it through archaeological dig and everything. And they may have found it originally through scans, but it's like, they talk about this ground-penetrating radar and shit, so you presume that within, like, a generation, they'll have even, like I said, you know, the equivalent of, like, what a Xerox was back in the day is what this would be now. In the future, it'll be like some laser version of a copy. And so who knows? We'll be able to peer deep into the Earth and get a very good picture of it, you know, to the point
Well, we have the National Reconnaissance Office, the NRO.
Yeah.
But you want to talk about secret organizations, that's one of the most secret, for a very good reason. Because these are the guys who discover where the missile complexes are, they're finding subterranean chambers, they're finding all this stuff. They are an extremely important part of our government intelligence apparatus, perhaps the most important part, for exactly that reason. They are finding things.
Mm.
Now, just because they find something does not mean that they're going to publicize it. I'm absolutely certain that our leading government officials, Trump will be one of them, is going to know about a lot of the secrets concerning Egypt, concerning Sumer, concerning ancient astronauts, all the stuff I write about, they're going to brief him on. Now, the question is how they're going to brief him on it. My guess is that they're going to alarm him because they get more money that way.
Will they? That's actually a good point. You kind of answered my question before I could, because I was thinking to myself, like, would they really want to risk telling him too much of the information? But then it's like, if they scare the shit out of him and he's like, we need an intense defense budget because the aliens could come back or something, then
bingo.
Of course, it's great for them. So it would make sense.
Bingo. Look, I'm not entirely against that. I do believe that they probably skew the information unfairly toward that bias because they get more money that way. Their jobs remain secure. However, that is not to say that there could not be a potential threat out there. We don't know. This is the kind of thing the president stood on that we do not know. They do not brief us on that. Now, I'll go further with that. Let's go into fantasy world and say that there was a world where I could become president. I would not be able to disclose everything that I knew to the listeners now. The only difference between me and a president in that regard is that I would have stuff that's out there already, and I would probably say, well, read my books.
Yeah.
But there would be a whole lot of things that I simply would not be able to talk about for what I'm certain are legitimate national and possibly world defense reasons. So I don't completely fault them. They are sitting on information I'm certain that probably should not be shared with everybody else for good reason.
I have a good I'll throw out like a conspiracy prediction. It's not even it's not a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy prediction. Kind of like how JFK like just couldn't keep his mouth shut. You know, the rumor is, and just told Marilyn Monroe about aliens and shit. Considering how tight Trump's family is, he's definitely going to tell all of them. And in turn, then you've got like three or four people that know that are like relatively young. Someone's going to slip up, and the alien information will get out somehow in a way we don't expect it. That's what I'm going to say. I'm not going to say it's like going to be disclosure or anything, but it's going to be like somehow. Somehow, it's too closely knit a family, and they operate in too many circles that somehow the secret of UFOs and aliens will leak out in that way, because they'll be like, holy shit, you're not going to leave my dad, you know what I mean? Something like that. That's That's my conspiracy prediction.
I do often wonder about that and how presidents deal with that, because they absolutely are sitting on knowledge that they cannot share with pretty much anybody, which has got to be immensely difficult.
I don't think Trump will do it. I think he'll, because they're like adult children. They're like George H.W. Bush and his kids. I presume he told them, but they were responsible enough not to tell anybody. But I think Trump's kids, you know, Trump's kids will probably
maybe
slip up, or maybe tell, you know, maybe indicate somehow. I'm hoping. It's a hopeful conspiracy prediction for Ruxgiving. It's based on just human nature and secrets and the nature of secrets.
Well,
so,
I keep wondering, you remember the Mars Attacks scenario? In the movie Mars Attacks, the president just discloses it. They have a meeting. They got the Joint Chiefs. The military's there. They've got their scientific analysts. They've got this message from Mars. They know the Martians are there and coming. They say, well, how do we deal with this? Well, it's the end of the world. They're going to destroy us all. It's the military. Scientists saying we can learn so much from them. We need to extend a hand. And the president kind of stuck in the middle saying, what the hell do I do? And he just openly discloses it. He just says, look, we've received the signal. They're there. Get used to it. And the world goes on until the Martians attack. The world just goes on, and it's one more topic of conversation.
And they
did the exact same thing in a movie called Mars Attacks, or not Mars Attacks, Mars Needs Women back in 1967, which is a very silly movie and a very bizarre movie. But they were playing it dead serious with exactly the same scenario. Like, look, the Martians are here. They are abducting people. They've told us that they're doing this. They have a reproduction problem. They need us to help. Their need outweighs our inconvenience, and we can't stop them. But we are working on it. Just wanted you to know. Thank you very much, the Pentagon. It's an interesting scenario. I mean, things could go that way at some point.
Right.
And I'm sure all presidents have been faced with that, and all world leaders have been faced with that. My guess is that all the world leaders basically put their heads together and say, look, for X, Y, and Z reasons, and there are a lot of them, I mentioned one of them earlier with the genetics thing and possible racist implications.
Yeah.
For every reason, maybe it's just wisest that we just don't talk about it until such time as we have to. And it's my guess that that is pretty much just the agreement between world leaders.
I would assume so, but yeah. It certainly seems like there's some kind of agreement between everybody not to talk about this, and I don't think it's because it's not real.
Oh, no, it's real.
Yeah, exactly. So, as crazy as it would be, as it sounds to some outsider listening to us now, it's like, I'm pretty sure the alien thing's real, folks, but who knows what it means or what it is.
I was asking myself the exact same question when I published my book. I just have to tell you this, because I was aware of what I had found, and I was aware of certain implications. My answer to that was, I believe if the material is presented properly, if you prep everything in advance and if you present it properly, it would not be panic. You could settle a whole lot of stuff right from the get-go and everything would be fine. And what I believe still to this day, I'm just one guy. No one has to listen to me. I am not standing behind a podium with some official office. I am not some credentialed scientist. So anyone can simply ignore what I have to say.
Well, to be fair, Bruce, you do have your own Thanksgiving special. I mean, not too many people, not too many people have that, but go on.
Yes. But, you know, I'm not someone that the world is going to look at and say, this guy knows what he's talking about. Now, maybe you guys do, but, you know, how many guys are you? All right?
Right.
And how many guys am I? Maybe I know what I'm talking about, maybe I don't. Certainly I believe that I know what I'm talking about. That's why I put the information out there. My own view on it is you can't keep all the kids in class stupid because some of the kids in class are stupid, or even because most of them are stupid. You can't hold the smart kids back. So if someone really wants to know what's going on, I put the information out there for them to think about and digest. The stupid kids in class, I don't have to worry about them. They're just going to dismiss it and say, oh, there's nothing to that. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. This is just bullshit. God is in his heaven and does not ride a flying saucer. And, you know, they're just going to dismiss me. So fine. Don't worry about it. The stupid kids will take care of themselves. The smart kids will pay attention and they'll learn more. They'll keep at it.
Yeah, well, I'm tempted to say something about regarding the election, but I'm not going to. Yeah, well, we'll see what happens, man. I mean, I lost my train of thought there. I was going to ask you about something regarding this whole thing, but I lost my train of thought. So if it comes, yeah, it usually does. We'll move on to Kevin Kelleher. He just wants to say he marks the start of the holiday season as the exact moment the Thanksgiving song from Bob's Burgers plays during the Ruxgiving show. He feels like his year couldn't end and the new one begin without it. So that's how I feel, man. You know,
well, I'm gonna laugh about that one for a long time, and thank you for making that comment.
Because I don't know if you know that. We play the Thanksgiving song from Bob's Burgers on the special. So, and yeah, that's like I said earlier. That's what, I mean, listen, folks, once I'd feel empty if there was no Ruxgiving, because I need, you know, I need that. I have intense OCD, as I said. So my holidays would be completely fucked if I didn't have the Ruxgiving special. So I love it.
I'm going to go ahead and tell everybody what I already told you, but I'm going to just clue them in. I wasn't sure there was going to be a Ruxgiving this year, only because it was so late. I did recognize that Tim had been busy with the election night thing.
Yeah.
And I had noticed on a couple of websites that was mentioned that it was in September or October. Tim said something like, "We will be back sooner than you think." So I thought he might be on hiatus, because it was awful late when we finally got
it's
back.
Been a crazy year. I've done like 6 shows normally,
right,
when I do like 30. So my life's been upended by a new job and everything. So,
right.
So you were right to have your faith tested. But like all the listeners, I've come through and proven that we can still produce.
Well, I'm very glad we did. I wasn't worried about it. I just thought, well, it's possible we had to go on hiatus for any number of different reasons, and we'll do something, you know, down the line. But we might have had to postpone the Thanksgiving thing. That did cross my mind. But I wasn't worried about it. I figured I'd be back at some point. Everything would be fine.
Believe me, these people on Facebook would never let me hear the end of it anyway. I'd be attacked by them. So.
I'm speaking in your defense, then.
Yeah.
Hey, look, Tim had a lot on his plate, okay? I recognize that. You guys got to recognize that, too.
Thank you. You heard it from him, folks. Now you have to. Stephen Strange. We got some short ones here. Let me get back to the long ones. Stephen Strange wants to know, cranberry or applesauce? Cranberry or applesauce at Ruxgiving?
Thank you. I love that one. Applesauce, actually.
Really?
I love cranberries. I have a slight allergy to them.
Oh, wow.
They create a trying to think of the right word. They create a kind of a bruise on the corners of my lips.
Yikes.
If I don't have too many of them, then I'm fine. I have to go real easy on cranberries. I do love cranberries, but generally I go for applesauce only for that reason.
Fair enough. All right. Crispadilla wants to know if you smoke trees, what the kids call the marijuana, which is legal in Colorado now, and Massachusetts in about 3 weeks. Not that I'm counting
that,
down the days, but...
I knew that, but it's possible some of your listeners didn't, so I'm glad you clarified. I don't, actually. I think I'm allergic to the stuff. I don't have a problem with it, and I always thought it should be legalized, and that has gone exceptionally well in Colorado. The legalization
Good.
Has gone very, very well. I know for a fact that they do not have any kind of tax problems, because I know someone personally who works for the IRS, and they say these guys are the best at reporting what they have. We've never had a problem with them. They're very straightforward. We've had no difficulties that were anticipated. They're just ecstatic about it.
And if I had the money, dude, I would get on the ground floor of this legal Massachusetts marijuana, because I think
it's
going to be a bubble that is, you know, it's going to be a gold mine at first, but... So if
Absolutely.
Anyone wants to invest in a Banal of America weed shop here in Mass once it's legal, I would absolutely be down, because I think it's a growth industry.
I was always in favor. I was always in favor of it for exactly that reason. It's terrific for the economy. Why the hell are you criminalizing this stuff and putting people away for it? And everybody uses it. For the love of God, everybody I know uses it, okay? Everybody, and they always have. The only reason I don't is because I seem to get some strange allergic reactions from it. So I don't really care for it.
Have you tried edibles?
I don't have a problem with the edibles. The only problem I have with the edibles is they put me to sleep.
They knock
out real fast.
That would make sense, yeah.
Other than that, and yeah, I do like the edible, but I don't have them very often. When I was working security, I wouldn't touch the stuff because it would show up. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, even if it's legal, I'm not sure how they work that now, because it is legal. So, you know, in their off hours, they
most
smoke
places,
all they want.
I mean, I know you weren't in the NFL, but I know that, like, the Denver Broncos can't get popped for smoking weed, even though it's legal in Denver, because it's still against the rules of the drug.
That's kind of my point. So,
yeah. So
I'm not sure how the security companies handle that now.
Yeah.
I might find out. I may have to go back to work for security. I don't know. But I'll find out then. So it was never a problem with me because I just don't use it anyway. Mm. I've got no problem with people who do. And, you know, more power to you. You're definitely stimulating the economy, and I'm glad it makes you happy. Me, I just prefer opening a good, strong beer. I got a Claymore Scotch Ale open right now that I'm not drinking anywhere near enough of. I was planning on getting drunk, so I really got to get to work on that.
Yeah, well, we still got an hour, so.
Yeah, we've only got an hour. I will be very buzzed by the end of the hour, I promise.
And generally, we end up going over the hour, so there's a good chance that
right.
we'll be in the Ruxgiving spirit, deep in the Ruxgiving spirit by the end of the show, because I'm trying to keep pace with you here. Now
well, every
that
year,
the night's underway.
Every year, I vow I'm going to get drunk on the show this year. I vow that I'm going to do it, and I just never. I end up talking too much, and I forget.
All right, well, that's because these people have all these questions, dude. James Scheisty, I'm going to chastise him, but in a nice way, for this question, because it's like, really, dude? His question is, what are some of your favorite books and why? I mean, it's a nice question and everything, but it's like, Jesus, dude, you know? It's like very vague, you know? I don't know. So
I was going to say, if you're listening right now and if you're on your keyboard, be a little more specific, and I will answer that.
Yeah.
You mean like nonfiction books, fiction books?
Yeah, comic books, like, you know.
Well, I love comic books. I'm going to tell you straight up, I love comic books. I'm a huge DC fan.
It's one of those, yeah, it's like somebody asks you what your favorite movie is. It's like you just go on for an hour and you just keep remembering movies you love, you know. It's.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah, point me
so.
Just a little bit more in that direction. I will be more than happy to answer that.
All right. Well, James Scheisty, you have 1 year to come up with some
hey,
specifics.
Hey, there's one thing right now. If you're on a keyboard, go ahead and type it in, you know.
How about just one? Can you recommend one book? Just one. So that way I feel like, you know, we don't want, maybe he's looking for a book to read over the holidays. So let's give him one book. I'll recommend the original Planet of the Apes.
Book. I'm with you on that. That's
yeah.
a fantastic book. Pierre
yeah.
Boulle. Pierre Boulle. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Back.
Yeah, Monkey Planet. It's great. So,
yes.
I read that a couple
book.
Summers ago and absolutely loved it.
That is not only a fantastic book, but I've loved every single movie that they've made from it, even the ones that weren't that good. And even the TV series was not that bad. It wasn't that great, but I just love Planet of the Apes. I love everything about it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm a huge Apes fan. So. Well, how about you?
I'm with you on that.
You're like, okay, so that's our recommendation. That's our book recommendation for James Scheisty. So pick up Monkey Planet by Pierre Boulle.
Remember, we live on the Planet of the Apes. Remember that.
Exactly. Steve Grohn wants to know, are the gods the aliens or are the aliens the gods?
Six of one, half a dozen of the other. Yes,
yeah,
they're one and the same.
Yeah, I think the answer to that question is yes.
Yes, it is, and it answers itself. What we perceive as the gods are people from another planet. In my view, probably Mars, possibly other planets as well. They may originally have come from some other solar system. I don't know. But certainly within the solar system, they were on Mars, and they were here. And our remembrance of them is as gods. That was both a good thing and a bad thing. There were times that they were incredibly oppressive, and other times that they weren't, but they were extremely beneficial to us. Just like, you know, differing administrations. Ra's the friend of the human race, or Thoth's the friend of the human race, and another, he's destroying the world with fire. Just ask anyone who's living in a foreign country right now that we've been, you know, carpet bombing, whether or not Ra's in a good mood.
Yeah, well, it's funny, the idea of, like, the gods and the angels. If people don't, it's a testament to sort of the, I don't even know, the willingness to disbelieve, the need to have blinders or something, where it's like, you look at a cargo cult, and it's like, that's essentially what religion is. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Why can't we have the self-awareness to look at a cargo cult and say, wait a minute, maybe that's what we've been doing all these years. Maybe we're a giant cargo cult for aliens. Like, it
yeah.
makes more sense than, like, an impossibly
that is exactly,
impossible
that is exactly my take
explain.
On it.
Yeah.
That is exactly my take on it. For those who are not fully aware of cargo cults, let me explain this to you. There are places in the Philippines which, during World War II, United States servicemen, they landed there, and they left supplies. They left some cargo when they left. Well, the natives there worshipped that cargo as coming from the gods because they came from the skies. They landed, you know, shared stuff with them and all this, and then they left. They are still revering that cargo.
Right.
And we've returned to them now, and we're still God. We're just aviators, you know. We're just average citizens from the United States who've been taught to fly and are working for the military or whatever other organization. And we even kind of try to explain that to them. Maybe some of them get it, and maybe some of them don't, but they still revere this cargo as having come from the gods. And, yeah, I think religion is, for the most part, that's what it is. We have just kind of taken it, what's the right way to put it? I don't want to say the wrong thing here. I think that a lot of us have sort of taken it to extremes or fantasized it in ways that it never originally was. But, yeah, I think that's where it all started. That's where we basically got our religions from.
Yeah. Seems that way to me, but...
That's not an anti-religious statement.
No.
It doesn't make anything that the religions have to say, you know, bad. I'm saying that's where they came from. That's the origin.
Yeah. I got no problems with religion, folks. So, don't write to us about that.
I say my prayers. I believe in God. Just so everybody knows, I do believe in a God.
Yeah, there's got to be something behind all this. Let me see. What's next on the thing? Joey Herbs, this is another one where we had a little problems. He says he wants me to know how you feel about the new movement of people trying to prove alternative cosmology. Then he says, if that makes sense. And then I said...
It would help if you pointed that a little more in direction. I do have an answer for that. I think I know what he's asking.
Okay, well, hold on now, because I did...
Certainly.
I did respond, no, it does not make sense. So let me find where he asked that. All right. Where the hell did that thing go? God damn it. There it is. I said, explain alternative cosmology. It sounds like mumbo jumbo. He says, it is mumbo jumbo, like the alternative shape to Earth. So now that may have completely thrown you off of what... What?
That did completely throw me off.
Yes, he says it's a prominent group of truthers. I'm curious if he heard of it or knows anything about it. Now, we don't understand. Then someone else says, a complete outsider now jumps in and says, you mean ideas like the electric universe theory? As best I can understand, it suggests that all force is electromagnetic. Da, da, da. I think Joey Herbs is talking about, like, flat Earth. But
well,
I'm not sure.
Flat Earth, no, but I will say something here. The electric universe theory, I am, to use the pun, I'm electrified by it. I am not sure whether it's correct or not, but I think that it may very well hold a lot of water. I have read some very interesting papers on that.
Is that like Velikovsky and shit?
Yes.
Okay.
Velikovsky was not completely off base. I believe he was wrong in a lot of his basic cosmology. In fact, I can prove it.
But he was on the right track.
But he was definitely on the right track. And... the electric universe theory, Velikovsky was not exactly proposing that. Electric universe theory is a little bit more coherent than Velikovsky. I do not reject Velikovsky out of hand. He was not completely off base. I do think that he went off track on a few things, pioneer. And the electric universe theory, I can't say that I'm a proponent of it, but I definitely do not reject it out of hand, and I do consider it extremely interesting, and I consider it to hold some water, enough to at least not rule out.
Okay, now what about the other thing I think that he might be talking about, which is the flat Earth? Because he's saying there's truthers involved, which is sounds like the flat... Because flat Earth became popular, like, in the last year or two. So I think he might be talking about flat Earth. So what do you think of the whole crazy flat Earth thing?
It's crazy.
All right, yeah, I didn't mean to prejudice the question there, but you agree anyway.
Yeah, I'll just say this simply, man. I don't see any reason to believe that the Earth is flat. I see every reason to believe it's round, and I have every reason to believe that the Earth revolves around the sun. I just don't know what else to say on that.
What about...
I could be wrong. Everyone could be wrong, but I do believe that that is the case.
What about the always beloved Hollow Earth?
That is a different kettle of fish.
I know.
The Hollow Earth theory, I can't endorse the Hollow Earth theory because those are different Hollow Earth theories. The Nazis had their own, which is a little weird to me. But that we might actually have a different core than we believe we do, I don't necessarily rule out, or that there might be some subterranean world. I don't necessarily rule out. That is very much up in the air. and it is on the speculative end of things, and I would need to see more information on any particular theory before I could comment on it.
Like a subterranean world, like a subterranean civilization, you mean?
I wouldn't even necessarily rule that out.
Right.
If there was one, my guess is that it would be people from other planets.
Or originals that, like, were here and then retreated to the inside of the planet when something like a flood happened or something.
I'm not even going to say that I put it on the far reach of possibilities. I'm just going to say that it's definitely on the speculative end of things. I wouldn't reject it out of hand, but if anyone wanted to suggest it, I need to know exactly what it was they were talking about and what sort of evidence they were referring to. The Nazis, I think, were off base.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's interesting, you know, the possibility. I guess if you think about it this way, it's like there was, you know, we've had millennia to explore the world and stuff, so it would make sense maybe that some civilization would somehow retreat underground and live there, you know?
We continue finding things. It's like this chamber in the pyramid. Remember, Machu Picchu was only discovered about 100 years ago. The Lost City of the Incas and all that. We still find things now and then. It's not like we've discovered every inch of the planet. We have not. We haven't gone deep into the Amazon because we can't. People die there. You go too deep into the Amazon, you just don't come back.
Yeah.
There are lots of explorers that tried to do that. And yes, we can map them with the National Reconnaissance Office and stuff like that, and who knows what's been found in there. The National Reconnaissance Office knows, but they're not about to go sharing that information with everybody.
Yeah. All right, so that was alternative cosmology. We covered every possible shape of the Earth, Joey, so I don't know what other shape you could, you know.
We are an oblong spheroid wobbling unevenly through space in predictable fashion along with all the other planets, which do the same. That's my answer to that.
Yeah. I don't know where this – I think the hollow Earth thing, honestly. I don't know. Have you ever – I know you've – obviously you know about the hollow Earth theory, but – I mean, the flat Earth theory, excuse me. Did you know how big of a comeback it's made, like, in the last couple of years?
I did not.
Oh, yeah.
I'll send you an article
about it. It's like, it's made a big comeback.
I did know one guy personally who believed that the Earth was flat and that we'd never been to space.
Yeah.
I thought that was bizarre. He was otherwise completely sane. I just, you know, kind of shrugged and said, well, we don't need to talk about anything else. I don't know where you're coming up with that.
Well, I said to somebody once, half jokingly, but it's not that the Earth is flat; it's that time is flat. So the Earth is like rolling like a ball along time. So it is time is a flat line. So maybe that's the where people.
You know what I'll tell you what my theory is on time.
Yes.
If anyone is even going to ask this, I'll give you my theory on time.
I would love that because it fascinates me as a concept. Yeah.
Time is not a dimension. Time is a measurement of the physical movement of bodies through space. Nothing else. It's a measurement it's an arbitrary measurement that we create in order to measure the time for one physical object to move from one location to another.
Yeah.
That is my definition of time.
People, like, is that like, why? What is it like a dimension? How people think? Like time, like a fourth dimension, are you saying? That
exactly.
Idea?
I don't see it as a dimension because it's not a direction.
Yeah, I never really understood. Yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah. Yeah, I always thought time as a fourth dimension was kind of a cheat in a way, where it's like, what? So, what you're saying, maybe.
There are all kinds of really bizarre, I call them pseudoscientific concepts. I could be wrong. 100 years ago, I would have laughed at the idea of radio or TV, all right? And I think anyone would have. And lo and behold, we have radio and TV. This is commonplace to us now. Microwave ovens, personal computers, who could have foreseen any of that? Anyone would have thought this is just nonsense. The idea of time travel or time as another dimension, I consider it pretty much the same thing. Now, if someone proves me wrong, I'll be more than happy to salute them and say, dude, you showed me wrong. And I'm glad you did. Interesting to know something new.
Yeah. Who knows? I don't think we can, like, travel within our own timeline. Maybe we can travel to a different, like, universe somehow, but I don't even...
Yeah.
Once you start thinking about that shit, it's like...
Well, even the Einsteinian continuum thing, if we accept the Einstein continuum, if you take this idea of the guy traveling at the speed of light for a year and coming back and 100 years have passed on Earth, he has not actually traveled through time. What has happened is that his time has compressed
right.
in relation relatively in to other time.
Mm-hmm.
So when he comes back out of that, his passage of time has been slower compared to everything else. But he has
exactly,
not actually
yeah.
traveled through time. If he had, he could travel back through time. That doesn't happen. There's an, it's physical compression. It's not actual time travel.
Exactly, exactly, yeah.
What's your Thanksgiving song?
No.
Yes, the cranberry sauce. We're having mashed potatoes. Ooh, the turkey looks great.
Len.
Thank you for loving me.
Len.
Thank you for being there.
Oh, God.
Everyone's thanking.
Len.
The whole world's thanking you.
Stop.
Thanking
Len.
Us for thanking
Stop.
You.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Cranberry sauce. We're having mashed potatoes. Oh, the turkey looks great. Thank you for loving me.
Len.
Thank you for being there.
Please.
Thank you for loving me. Everyone's thanking. The whole
Len.
World's thanking you. Thanking
Stop.
Us for thanking you.